Afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs to order. For the record, it's 3:45 p.m. Tuesday, January 4th, 2020. We're in the Belts Room of the Thomas Stewart Building. We do have a quorum to do business. With us today present are Senators Greg Jackson, Senator Hoffman's on other state business, myself, Senator Bishop, Vice Chair Senator Peter Machicki, Senator Showers on his way. We have a little bit of a tight timeline. I apologize for being late. I had a bill on another committee, and I know we have some other commitments, so we're going to get rolling here. I'd like to recognize our Senate Records staff and Mr. Dick Rolon, Senate Records, Carson Walters from the Juno LIO, and Cody Grusendorf from my office. I'm not going to tell you to turn off your phone. You already know how to do that. Today we're going to have up one bill, and that is Senate Bill 121. That's the TANF bill by Senator Keel. And then we're going to have a census update. This committee is all things census, and we started off last year with census in this committee, and Lori Wolf from the 4-Acre Group and Brett Wilburn and Corey Novi from the U.S. Census Bureau, I think, is online. Are in the room. I'm winging it here. And so, with that being said, Senate Bill 121, TANF. This is the first hearing of the bill. It'll be a brief introduction of the bill along with testimony from Health and Social Services and Tlingit Haida. And I'd like to welcome Senator Keel and his staff, Kathy, to the table, and put yourselves on the record and tell us what you got.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jesse Keel. I'm the senator from District Q. It's a privilege to present the bill this afternoon. I want to introduce my staff, Kathy Schlingheide. As is typical, the staff is the real expert on the legislation, but I'll do my best to introduce it to you anyway. May be the kiss of death for a bill, but I'm going to try it anyway. Mr. Chairman, this is a simple little technical fix. For many, many years, the state of Alaska has partnered with the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska to provide a couple of programs, one of which is the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families program, TANF. Pardon me. It's been an effective partnership. Tlingit and Haida does an excellent job helping families to self-sufficiency and has been very successful in partnering with any number of groups and agencies around the region and around the state. They do, in addition to an effective job, they do a fiscally efficient job for the state of Alaska because their participation helps lower the general fund requirement for the state of Alaska's maintenance of effort to participate in the TANF program. Many years ago, when this partnership began, there was a section put into statute that required the partners to be nonprofits. Not exactly sure how that section got into statute, Mr. Chairman, but a tribe is not a state-chartered nonprofit corporation. It's a tribe. It's just a different entity altogether. As folks have looked over the program and made sure all I's are dotted and T's are crossed, this little inconsistency with statute was pointed to, and so this bill takes care of the difficulty and will allow the partnership to continue as it has for many years by deleting that little requirement. I should note that doesn't open up the partnership for TANF to any and all organizations that might someday be interested. There is a list in the statute. Tlingit Haida is on that list. And that list is brought over from federal law. So this isn't a Katie bar the door, all folks come in and willy-nilly bill. This is, Mr. Chairman, a simple fix. Thank you.
All right. Do we need a sectional? Or did you get it? Okay. Would you like to add anything? You want to put yourself on the record? What did your boss miss?
For the record, this is Kathy Schlingheide, staff to Senator Keel, and I think that about covers it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so summation, this is a technical fix in the matching federal law to state law. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Keel or staff, it seems that it said that the tribal entity had to have a nonprofit entity, not necessarily that the entire tribe had to be nonprofit. That's what the language that you're repealing seems to say. Had they previous had a nonprofit? I don't know if it's 501c3, but had they previously had a nonprofit entity within the tribe that qualified them under the laws that exist?
Mr. Chairman, in answer to Senator Michicki's question, there are folks here from Tlingit and Haida who can answer that with 100% authority. I do not believe they did, no. I believe this has been a disconnect between our statute and the reality of the tribe's good work on this for many years.
Thank you. No further questions of the bill sponsor. We can have our guests come up and put themselves on the record. Shonda, let's see, who do we want up here? Would be Jesse Parr and Kendra Caesar. And if you two would like to come up and put yourselves on the record, and Senator Michicki had a question, I'm sure you heard it and could just dive right in there and answer it.
Sure. My name is Kendra Caesar. I'm outside counsel for Tlingit and Haida. And to answer Senator Michicki's question, we had discussed with the Department of Law and the Department of Health and Social Services what the options for a solution to this problem. So we did, 3 years ago, when this problem was first identified, explore the option of creating a nonprofit or incorporation of the tribe, which really we felt very strongly about that it was add an extra layer of bureaucracy. Require additional time and expense without actually adding any value to services. So in our discussion with the department, we did decide that we would pursue a statutory fix. And so that's why we're here today, because incorporation just wasn't a workable option for the tribe, wouldn't add any value to services, and the tribe's been successfully carrying out this program for 20 years without ever having incorporated before.
Follow up. In the existing statute, when it names the Tlingit and Haida Central Council, is that the same entity that is discussed in the bill as Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska?
Yes.
Doesn't that, notwithstanding, cover those that are listed in Section A?
I'm sorry, is your question, Section A does, like the federal law, specify which entities that Congress authorized to carry out the program for Alaska, recognized as being the appropriate entities to carry out the program. But this requirement in Section C does, when it refers to the requirement that Alaska Native organizations must incorporate, these other entities, save Metlakatla, are already incorporated, yes. I'm sorry if I misunderstood your question.
No, I think you answered it. I was wondering if it was necessary. It looked like you were covered under Section A. But I think, I may have other questions, Mr. Chairman.
We're hearing and holding the bill today. We're not going to move the bill today, so we'll have time to ponder.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Don't take that in any way that I'm not supportive of repairing this technicality. Just sometimes it seems like we're fixing things that are common sense issues that seem adequately dealt with in existing code. That was my question. What my question was more about.
Thank you,
Senator Michicki. We do have the Department of Law online. How about we go to the Department of Law and ask them, do they support this piece of legislation?
Certainly.
Yep.
Well, I have a specific question for him if you want to go that way.
Sure. Okay. I have the Department of Law online. Stacy Crayley, is that correct?
That's correct. I'm on the line, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And I know that you've been paying attention. So does this Does this bill, you heard Senator Machicki's question. I think he might have a follow-up question for you, and I'll let him go first. I have one.
Well, I think you heard my question. Is this change necessary as a technicality, or are they covered under Section A?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, we believe that the technical fix is required. And it's not just because of our statutory language, but because of the way the federal tribal TANF program is set up. So we do believe that a fix is necessary.
Thank you. And a brief follow-up.
Sure.
And does that fix that for that situation for everyone on the list as well?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, as Ms. Caesar indicated, the vast majority of those listed on the in the statute are already organized as nonprofits, so that's not a problem in that context. And also, the other entity that is different is, of course, the Metlakatla, which is, of course, is a reservation tribal reservation here in Alaska. So this fix would solve the problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for the question, Senator Machicki. And I just have a question for the Department of Law. Do you support the changes in this bill?
Mr. Chairman, the Department of Law takes no position on this fix. We recognize there were three different ways to fix this problem, one of which was discussed by Ms. Caesar earlier, and they declined to become an organized nonprofit or file as a nonprofit, which is fine. Another way to there's another technical amendment that could come forward through the legislation, which is to amend subparagraph 13, I think 813 of the statute, or this one. So any of the three would have worked for us. We don't have a preference. So it's not that we don't support the bill. We support the fix.
Thank you for that answer. Okay. Any other questions?
No question, just a comment.
Senator Gray Jackson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to take a moment to thank Senator Keel for bringing this forward. And quite frankly, to be honest, I don't blame the organizations for not wanting to deal with becoming a nonprofit if they really didn't have to. And I'm glad that this housekeeping issue is coming forward. I look forward to moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you for those comments.
I have one more question.
Senator Machicki has a follow-up.
And I'm not sure who's best to answer this question, but why was Section 1C in statute originally for whoever can answer that question?
Department of Law, you going to answer?
Well, I'm going to ask Ms. Caesar to take the first stab on it. She's got a better legislative history on how this all came about from one of our prior conversations. If she's comfortable answering that, I think it would be best coming from her.
Sure. Excuse me, Senator Machicki. We did look at the state legislative history on this, and unfortunately, it doesn't actually shed light onto that question. So we're not sure why it got inserted, other than perhaps as a regional tribe, which is unique in Alaska, it was confused with the other nonprofits. There does seem to be some general misunderstanding about that. It is a regional tribe, unlike any other tribe. And of course, Alaska, we do tend to have a regional delivery of services of this type. But otherwise, we were not able to find an answer to that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, anything else you'd like to say on the record before we set this aside and go on to our census overview?
No, Senator. Well, Senator Bishop, I guess I just add that I do have Jesse Parr here, TANF manager for Clinkett and Haida, and he is very knowledgeable about the savings to the state, which Senator Keel already spoke about a bit. So
would
there are
like
questions
to,
about that.
Would you like to highlight some of those, put yourself on the record and highlight some of those savings? Do you have those at your fingertips?
For the record, I'm Jesse Parr. I'm the TANF program manager for Clinkett and Haida. Basically, we receive our federal TANF funding directly from the federal government. The tribal TANF programs throughout the state comprise about 30% of the federal TANF funding, and the state's maintenance of effort requirement is reduced by 30% as well. So approximately $15 million in savings from, let's say, $52 million in change to $36 million in change. So it's good for all parties involved, and I just want to affirm our genuine desire to continue providing services and helping people.
Thank you. And the more that we can do to create jobs and workforce development and education and training, the less people you got at your shop, right? All right. I've had worked with this program with Tandon Chiefs and Fairbanks very closely. Great. So thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
And we'll set this bill aside, and if we'll take a brief at ease and give our next presenters a chance to load up here and make their presentation. Okay, thank you for that brief at ease, and I think the deck's set, and we're ready for our next group of presenters, and we have a distinguished group before us today, Ms. Lori Wolf from the 4-Acre Group, Barrett Wilbur. All right, Alaska Counts, this is an easy one, I got this one, Corey Novy, U.S. Census Bureau, Novy River, I've been on that a lot. Okay, Barb Miranda, and you're with? Okay, both of you, Census Bureau. All right, everybody's at the table. Don't have to invite them up. Please, let's just go ahead and everybody put themselves on the record right now. And if we change speakers, please identify yourself for Senate records so we can have a chronological order of who's speaking when. So, floor is yours, and we're waiting with bated breath.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lori Wolf. I am the president and CEO of the 4-Acre Group, and we stand up the Alaska Census Working Group, which has launched the statewide campaign Alaska Counts.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Barrett Wilbur. I work for Alaska Counts Communications. Thanks for having us this afternoon.
Hello, my name is Corey Novy, and I'm with the U.S. Census Bureau. I am an assistant regional manager for the Regional Census Office in Los Angeles, and I'm happy to be here.
Good afternoon. I'm Barb Miranda, partnership specialist for the U.S. Census Bureau based here in Juneau, and we have quite a team here in Alaska who I believe you've met, so I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. So this is Lori Wolf. I will just set the stage for all of us and then turn it over to Barrett, who will talk more about our communication and outreach. And then we'll hand it over to our friends at the Census Bureau to ask and answer more of the technical questions about how we're going and moving. And then we're happy to take questions from all of you or take questions as we go as well. So again, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you so much for having us back. I believe our second time with you, could be the third, not sure. It's been a long ride. Thank you for having us here today. We're very excited to come back. The census has begun, and we are excited to bring you an update. So just a little background as we move through our time. So as the Alaska Nonprofit Association and Nonprofit Capacity Builder, the 4-Acre Group knows firsthand the importance of the census and for our nonprofits and for the state as a whole. Census is our number one public policy priority because, after all, 18% of all federal dollars flow directly into the nonprofit sector every year. We simply could not miss an opportunity to have a more universal, positive impact on Alaska than with the 2020 census. And we thankfully are not alone in seeing the potential we could have together. About 4 years ago, as part of our initial focus on census, we created and continue to stand up the Alaska Census Working Group, a statewide nonpartisan group of stakeholders committed to ensuring an accurate count of Alaska in the 2020 census. I want to also highlight our key partner since the beginning, Cook Inlet Housing Authority, who has contributed significant in-kind contributions of staff and resources and has been an equal partner to 4-Acre in our efforts. I also want to acknowledge the Alaska Public Interest Research Group and their incredible efforts that we'll learn more about through Barrett in leading all of the census translation efforts as part of our core team over the last year. Unfortunately, we had little information about past efforts to highlight the census in Alaska and the unsettling reality that the count was going to start and the Census Bureau itself was hamstringed by a lack of appropriate and adequate funding and the politics of the day. We knew that if Alaska was going to have a better result in 2020, we had to do things differently here in our state. To be sure, what we have created is seen as a grand exception to the rule of how states organize to promote the census. Indeed, we have created a model that other states and national organizers tell us is a hallmark success in its very creation, structure, multi-sector participation, and operation. We also hope that it turns out to be true in the results as well. So with little to go on, we started our effort in what we called our air game. In this phase, we visited you as the working group, in that we were focused on the importance of the census with policymakers like yourselves and advocated for appropriate funding and sufficient resources for the census at both the federal and state level. We also established wonderful working relationships with the Census Bureau staff at the national, regional, and state level, which we continue to have today. Since June of 2019, we've shifted to a ground game and we have started the outreach phase where we are engaging Alaskans about the importance of the count. We're grateful to the Census Bureau Alaska staff who have been a terrific partner in our work, even when theirs and our resources have been very limited. To that end, we are both focused on creating complementary resources and spreading all of our capacity as far as it will reach across the state. We are also thankful to Jordan Schilling in the governor's office who is staffing the State Complete Count Commission, and we appreciate his communication and collaboration. This fall, we were proud and excited to have launched Alaska Counts, a statewide education campaign.
Lori?
Yes?
Just briefly for a second, I'd just like to recognize that Senator Hoffman and Senator Schauer has been here with us for some time. I just want that on the record.
Thank you so much. So I'll start by sharing that while most of the country and most households in Alaska won't be counted until March, the census started early in Alaska last week in Tuksuk Bay, where people were counted in person by the U.S. Census Director himself. The rest of the country will celebrate Census Day on April 1st. We will be well on our way to completion by this date, and most of our households responding to the census will be starting in March. Since the census is underway in parts of the state and fast approaching in others, now is our time to engage. We have 3.2 billion reasons to care about the census, because that's how many federal dollars flow into Alaska each year based on census data. This funding goes to every Alaska community for everything from roads and airports to hospitals and schools. Given current state and local budget gaps, it is increasingly important that Alaska receive its fair an equitable share of these federal resources. If Alaskans go undercounted in the census, our state does not receive its fair share of this critical funding. And the impacts aren't felt for 1 year or 2 years, but for 10 years. We only have one shot at getting this right, And that shot lasts us 10 years long. Beyond funding, there are many other reasons the census matters. Organizations across sectors rely on accurate census data to plan for the future. Whether a local government determining a need for a new program, or an airline deciding whether or not to add another flight route, or a store deciding where it should open, all of it depends on good census data. When we think about census, why census matters, we often say it's about dollars, data, and democracy. In dollars, as I just noted, the census determines funding for critical services for our state and community, from everything from police and fire to roads and airports to housing and healthcare. Every community, every Alaskan benefits from the dollars that come into our state each year based on census data. For data, I often say that the census is like toothpaste. We all have it, we all use it, but rarely do we consider how it was made or where it comes from. Census data is everywhere, and organizations across the state and across sectors use this data to plan for the future and make decisions about where to invest in our communities. Whether a local government planning for an emergency response or a business deciding where to open its store, all of us depend on accurate census data to make decisions that benefit our state. In terms of democracy, census data is used to determine local and state political boundaries, through the redistricting process, and the Census Bureau data is also used to enforce voting and civil rights laws. Without accurate census data, these laws cannot be adequately enforced. For all of these reasons, accurate census data is critical. The risks of not having accurate data could mean a reduction in federal funds for our state and our local governments, an inability to plan for the future by our local communities, improper enforcement of the voting and civil rights laws, and possibly the reduction of essential services. There is truly so much at stake. The census is also critical to our state economy, not just for state and local government programs, but for businesses across the state. This chart represents all of the critical census-based data that businesses use to plan and invest in our state and our communities, from everything from macro measures like GDP to local market data. Getting an accurate count is essential to ensuring accurate data, not just for our governments and our nonprofits, but also for private businesses of all size that are investing and employing Alaskans in Alaska. There is a lot at stake, and we know that we are working against some specific barriers to an accurate count, which include a general distrust of government, along with concerns about data privacy and confidentiality, language barriers, because the census will only provide a complete set of language translations in 12 non-English languages and translate other materials into 56 languages, but importantly, none of these are in our Alaska native languages. Barriers to connectivity. This will be the first census to push online response. While not all households in Alaska will be asked to respond online, we need to be aware of where digital divides exist in our state and how we will overcome these to make sure that all Alaskans can respond in the 2020 census. We do appreciate the headway that the census is making with hiring a census worker in each of our Alaska Native villages to do a paper count, but this still leaves all of our more urban places with a mostly internet-based process. Overall, we also know that there are funding barriers. The federal government has made fewer resources available than we believe are needed for an accurate count in a place like Alaska, and an overall communication barriers, as the Census Bureau will not do outreach to Alaskans only who have PO boxes to alert them that the census is coming to their communities. Yeah.
Could I break in here?
Of course.
On this topic right here. I just like to ask my committee members, how many of you have heard the Census Bureau that's been running the radio commercial? How many of you have heard that? Yeah, I'm hearing it all the time.
Might be them, it might be us.
I think it's them, but anyway, I just wanted to put that on the record, that we're hearing it, so that's good.
I don't listen to the radio.
Senator Marchicki?
Yeah, just a brief question. I'm sure you have a plan for interpreters in Alaska Native and other communities that where the language may not be translated. What is the plan for? I'm sure that's probably part of the population that was missed for the last census.
So through the chair, we're going to cover that in about 1 minute, if we can pause for an answer to that question. Barrett's going to walk you through all of that. It's exciting. Okay. It's worth the wait. Let me just say one more thing before we get to Barrett, and I'll pass on to her. So I think just recognizing the importance of the census for our state and the many risks of an undercount in 2020, that's what we're all about. The Alaska Census Working Group launched a statewide education campaign to actually combat all of those issues that we just talked about. So we have a whole suite of materials available on alaskacounts.org, and I encourage each of you to visit the website and download and share some of these resources. We've also been going door to door. As some of you know, we visited many of you just a few days ago, and we'll visit many more legislators as well to ask you what you want specifically so that we can help you communicate to your constituents. We created all these websites, all these resources for people to use, knowing that we have huge barriers and that you are critical voices along the way. So the overall goal of our efforts at Alaska Counts is that we are all sharing these three basic messages. We want all Alaskans to understand these three things: that the census is confidential, that personal census data is used only for statistical purposes and cannot be shared outside of the Census Bureau, and that Census Bureau officials risk time up to 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine for sharing any personal census data. Again, the 2020 census will ask for less information than we ask Alaskans when they fill out their PFD and has more safeguards in place. Two, the census is critical for our communities. Every Alaskan and every community in our state benefits from being counted. Again, 3.2 billion reasons why. That's the amount of annual funding that is on the line for our state. The census can be seen, it can sometimes seem big and bureaucratic, but really the census is just about people and communities and the resources that we'll have for the next 10 years. And the census is easy to complete. My favorite thing to say about the census, it's 10 questions, it takes 10 minutes, and it will have 10 years of funding impact. So Barrett's going to talk to us a little bit more to answer your questions about our communication strategy and what we're doing to support and especially highlight the translated materials. And I can click if you want to talk.
Sure. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Barrett Wilbur. I'm the Alaska Counts Communications Manager. Thank you so much for having us and giving us the opportunity to present on some of our strategy and some of the work that we've put in over the last couple months to ensure that no Alaskan learns about the census for the first time by someone knocking at their door holding a clipboard. So our strategy really is based on trying to elevate trusted voices in our communities. We know who Alaskans trust, and that's each other. And so one of our strategies is not to tell Alaskans what to do, but it's to get local networks and local people to talk to each other about the census and elevate people who are already trusted within their communities and within their networks. So in order to do that, we've put together a strategy that uses a lot of different communications options across mediums. So that means we are using direct communications and advertising, from radio PSAs to digital advertising. We're doing plenty of outreach. We've started a mini grant program along with all of the materials that we've created. And lastly, I'll talk a little bit today about some of our translation work and those materials that we've created. So communications, as Lori mentioned just a moment ago, the U.S. Census Bureau doesn't mail anything to P.O. boxes. As most of us, I think, in Alaska know, there are plenty of Alaskans who don't use street addresses but only use P.O. boxes. So we have made it our mission to send mailers to warn people that the census is coming. We have sent out so far 2 of planned 4 mailers to about 88,000 P.O. boxes across Alaska. And that's not just rural Alaska. That includes about 12,000 P.O. boxes within the municipality of Anchorage. So that's how we're meeting. That's how we're getting information to people through the mail. We also have a radio PSA playing. You may have heard it. We have English PSAs playing statewide through APRN, the Alaska Radio Network, as well as translated PSAs in Yupik, Dinaka, which is a Koyukon Athabaskan language, Inupiaq, and Yupik. Gwich'in, and those are playing in western, northwest Arctic, and northern Alaska, as well as the interior. We've contracted with a digital advertising company to promote digital advertising for the census. And I just got back our first report on our digital advertising. And in the month of January, I think we started in the second week in January. And so far, that campaign has had 64,000 impressions for Alaskans. And so that's things like SEO optimization, geo-targeting people based on where they're using the internet, and social media promoted content, pre-roll videos, as well as just traditional displays and advertising banners online. We're also working to ensure that we're getting earned media. So since January 1st, I guess, our team has been contacted by local, national, and international reporters. We've participated in more than 15 articles that have come out from local media like KTUU and our local television to the BBC. One of our team members went on the radio and was broadcast across the BBC, which was exciting for us. We also have social media that we're working on to build networks and communications that way. It also gives people a very easy way to get in touch with us and ask us questions. Right now, we have 537 followers, and last week, our posts reached a total of 24,000 people. So we're proud and we're excited about that. That's the basis of our communications work. In terms of our outreach, one of the very basic things that we started with was creating a logo, a brand, and materials for Alaska Counts. We wanted Alaskans all over the state to have access to materials that felt professional, but also Alaskan, that they could use. We have helped communities and organizations, from local organizations to complete count committees, to remake our materials and make them specific to them. You can see the slide has an example of the buttons that we've made, ranging from I'm a kid and I count, I'm an Alaskan and I count, to Alaskan native language buttons that talk about, you know, I'm Tlingit and I count. And we've even translated some of these buttons into Alaskan native languages so that people can really represent themselves in the way that they feel is most appropriate. We have partnered with a bunch of different organizations and people across Alaska we've tabled at events like the Alaska Municipal League's annual conference, the Alaska Federation of Natives annual conference, and things like the Refugee and Immigration Services event that was held in Anchorage a few weeks ago. So we're always looking for ways to engage partners, to build our networks, and to elevate trusted voices. One of our big opportunities that we're really proud of is our mini grant program. So we rolled this out, I think, in December. We offer any organization can apply for a grant of $250 to do local outreach in their community. Whatever they think is the best solution for their community, we'll give them the money to do outreach. And so we've had 62 applications and 40 awardees approved to date, and we've released a little less than $10,000 in funding throughout the state. We're proud that 23 of our 30 census tracts have received mini grant funds, and there are just a few, maybe I'll list now. So if any of these are part of your district, we would love to hear from them and to be able to give them funding for local resources. So that's the Northwest Arctic Borough, the Nome Census Area, the Bethel Census Area, the Bristol Bay Borough, both Aleutians East and West Census Areas, and the Valdez-Cordova Census Area. So if any of you are listening, we would love to hear from you guys and to give you dollars to do census outreach in your communities. So that's the basics of our outreach program. One of the last kind of pillars of our strategy, outreach communications, is language translation. As Lori mentioned earlier, the Census Bureau doesn't really have the expertise or the resources to translate anything into Alaska Native languages. Here in Alaska, that means it was up to us to do it ourselves. And we felt that was important for a couple reasons. Not only the mechanics of if their first If their first language is an Alaska Native language, they're going to understand materials better if they're presented in that language. But we found that especially with in terms of building trust, getting people invested in the census, and especially reaching people in some of the hardest to count places in the nation, ensuring that materials were available to them that they felt really spoke to them, not just in terms of their content, but in terms of the mechanics, that was really helpful. So we organized with help from our partners at the Alaska Public Interest Research Group a language convening in mid-December where we paid for transportation and organized logistics for 25 plus speakers of Yupik, Gwich'in, Dinaka, and Inupiaq to come to Anchorage and have a cross-cultural dialogue. They broke into different groups every day, and as well as talking across groups, and did 6+ hours of translation a day of census ideas and materials. And so that's can be more complicated than it sounds. There aren't necessarily easy ways to translate census ideas like apportionment into Yupik. And so our translators not only looked for the words to make this happen, but looked for ideas how to describe census ideas in ways that made sense culturally to them. One of the examples that they used a lot was when you talk about apportionment and the federal government awarding money to Alaska, they talked about the way that within smaller communities, if you would divide moose meat among people in the community so that everyone gets an equal share of resources and that you support each other through the community that way. So it was both translation and also kind of making things culturally relevant for an Alaska Native audience. And we were proud that what came out of that conference is our Alaska Native language resources. This page is up on our website right now. We have translated language guides into 4 languages. So, you know, if you're walking through the census and you are a Yupik first, if your first language is Yupik and you want to go download the Yupik Census Language Guide, it will walk you through the process of answering the census and explaining each question to you in Yupik so that you don't have to deal with the English side of it. We also were proud that our translators not only translated the census materials and ideas, but they were really excited about creating Alaska Native PSAs. So we have both radio audio PSAs and video PSAs that are up on our website and our YouTube channel and that are being shared on social media. So those are bilingual in Alaska Native languages and in English. So here's an example of some of the language PSAs that were created by our translators. So again, those are in Inupiaq, Gwich'in, Dinaka, which is the Khoikhoi Athabaskan language, and Yupik. The last section on our language resources guide is our world language materials. Since we use our website as a clearinghouse for useful resources for the census for Alaskans, we wanted to make sure that since Alaska is very diverse and the Anchorage School District alone speaks more than 110 languages, we wanted to make sure those world languages that information was readily available for Alaskans. So we printed in partnership with the municipality of Anchorage these Know Your Rights cards in up to 10 languages, which give people who don't speak English important information about how the census is safe, confidential, and easy to complete. And we also on our website have a list of language resources for more than 55 world languages for Alaskans that might be more comfortable speaking a different first language than English. Those resources are available. So this all boils down basically to say that trusted voices matter in Alaska, and they are what will make the difference in 2020. We saw translators at our language summit who came in the door not knowing what the census was, not being interested in answering it, and not really trusting the census as an idea, to saying, you know, wow, this is really important. This is going to make a difference for our communities, and we wish the census happened more often than every 10 years. And so to us, that really felt like the success was really galvanizing local trusted voices to be able to take that message back to their community. So thank you. I think that's it for me. So I'll turn the microphone back to Lori, but thank you for the opportunity to speak and to share what our campaign is doing.
Thank you, Lori Wolf, back on the record. And I notice flipping through some slides, Barrett showed you a slide that you don't have in your slide deck, but what it is a screenshot of our website at Alaska Counts, so, which is the screenshot of all of the new language materials that just went live about 48 hours ago. So that's why you don't have a picture of it in your own slide deck. So. Thanks for being flexible with us about that. Before we turn it over to get the more technical side and understand how the census is working, I wanted to just take an opportunity. I have been going door to door with legislators, and we did a lunch and learn last week, and we're just learning more and more about how to help you continue to maximize your trusted voice in your community around the census. So we did create some specific suggestions based on things that we've heard from you and other ideas that we also have, and we share those with you again today. Shared some of them again last week in the Lunch and Learn, but even more specific today based on some things that we've been learning. We know that most all of you are doing regular constituent outreach. And so we are trying to catch up to you and all of that and provide you materials that you can use that's more customized. We took lots of notes the last time we were here. We'll be back again. And our goal is to make this as easy as possible for you to just pick up the information and share it with your constituents in a way that works for you. So we're going to try to provide that to you in lots of ways. Things that you can do on your own while you're waiting for us to give you those materials for your newsletter and your blog and your social media and all of that stuff. There are complete count committees in every one of your regions, and we do encourage you. Well, Alaska Counts is a statewide effort. It's where it gets localized is at the local level, is at the complete count committee level. I know I'm on the complete count committee for Anchorage. We had a convening in Anchorage just yesterday where we had about 60 Anchorage folks come together to talk about activating in communities across Anchorage. So there are complete count committees really localizing the effort using Alaska Counts materials and Census Bureau materials as well. So you can connect in if you're curious about that. We tend to have a rule, if we're going to be in a room with more than three people, we talk about the census, and we hope maybe that you'll do that too. So anytime there's a place where you feel like you can activate your community, the more you talk about it, the more we normalize it, and the more everybody wants to participate, and we get rid of some of that fear that's out there. Barrett mentioned the mini grant program, and while you all might not be applying for mini grants, your constituents sure can, and we would really just love for you to help spread that word. That is really about understanding that when we build trust as Alaskans, when Alaskans talk to Alaskans. And so the more we can just let people know that that's an opportunity, the better. We did also bring you a checklist for being a census champion. Please, if you could hand that out to people, we would appreciate that. Just helping people just know how we can partner up. And again, just lots of opportunities, but even just the simple act of talking with your friends and your family and your colleagues about why census matters and what it does for our state and what difference it makes. I think even that level of communication can make a big difference. And then finally, really just encourage you all, the Census Bureau's got a really great tool out there where you can actually just click on it and see how you look at your district and look at how the counting's going to happen and get a little bit more just about what that looks like for you. So again, just encourage you to use the resources that not only that we've created, but that the Census Bureau has created for you again as well. I just will actually highlight, one moment. So here's just a great example. In addition to the map that the Census Bureau has counted, Donna Bach, who's the rural tribal specialist for the census, shared with us this announcement, this ANIAC announcement. So they have their own Facebook page where they just have local community announcements. And what we loved about this so much was it just was such a local moment where they actually just took a picture of all the census workers that were about to be on the ground in ANIAC and said, hey, look, if there are these people wanting wandering around in your community, be super nice to them. And if they need a place to sleep, like let them sleep on the gym floor or in the clinic floor, or, you know, just offer them a cup of tea or, you know, whatever. Because, again, just trying to normalize and make it a very local response. You know, when random people are wandering around your community, you might wonder what they're doing there. So we just loved this example because it looks simple, but it makes such a huge difference. And that's the kind of outreach that we really need in Alaska to make the census work. So I leave you with this thought before I turn it over to our partners in the Census Bureau that, again, we get, it's 10 questions, it's 10 minutes. It takes it, but it has 10 years of impact, and we can all make a difference in this area. So I'm proud that you're all census champions. I hope that we can continue to grow more census champions along the way. With that, I'll turn it over.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Yes, we can get out of here. And
Senator Machicki has a question. Lori?
Just before you transition, I just signed up for Alaska Counts while I was sitting here. It takes your email address, your name, your last name, and you have to prove that you're not a robot. You should make a superstar in Alaska of the woman who is the first one counted.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to identify more than that's the first of 280 million Americans that are counted happen right here in our state. Is that right? What was the woman's name? I believe you shared it publicly.
Her first name is Lizzie. Her last name is... You want to pronounce that for me?
For the record, my name is Barrett Wilbur. Through the chair, I think her name was pronounced Lizzie Chimacook.
There's a through the chair, there is a fabulous story about her in the Washington Post that has gone all over the world. And I, if you haven't read it, it's just spectacular. I feel like she is a rock. She's Alaska's rock star. So anytime we can celebrate her, we sure will. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so thank you, and I appreciate. I'm glad that you folks are carrying the torch because you're definitely passionate about what you do, and for a good reason. $3.2 billion.
Right.
Thank you. So we have about 20 some minutes. Can you get through your slides?
I can rush as much as possible. So I'm sure 20 minutes will be fine. So thank you again. My name is Karina Novi, and I'm with the Census Bureau in the Los Angeles Regional Census Center. The first slide is just to show you that we have an area census office right in Anchorage downtown, and that's the office that's responsible for the entire state of Alaska. What I want to do today, though, is go over our staffing status, where we are now and where we plan to be going forward deeper into peak operations. I also want to go over a summary of each of the types of operations that we conduct in Alaska, in particular the operations that are very specific to Alaska. I want to go over their schedules, show you what we've done and what we still need to do to get a complete count. So the first slide is our management staff, and you can see we have a full management staff in our area census office. We have an area manager, Mr. Jeffrey Bottorff, and what's unique about him and his position is that most of our area managers are based out of our regional census center, but we made a deliberate decision to hire an area manager who lives and has lived for a considerable amount of time in the state of Alaska. And not only does he live in Alaska and has really close knowledge of Alaska, but he's the only area manager that's focused on just one area census office on one state, so he can give as much support to the census in the state as possible. We have an area census office manager. We have a lead census field manager. We have three census field managers just to focus on remote Alaska operations. We have three census field managers to focus on the other peak operations. We have a recruiting manager that has just done an outstanding job, Ms. Jessica Curtis. As far as I heard this morning, she had recruited 9,690 applicants as of this past weekend. We have administrative manager and we have an IT manager.
Excuse me.
Yes?
Can I have a clarification on that? Your recruiting manager. So I'm assuming that's a bad word to use in this business, but that those are employees? to go out and do
that? No, recruiting managers recruit applicants that are interested in working in the census.
That's what I just said.
Right. They're not employees yet, no.
But they're potential employees.
They are potential employees.
And how many potential employees, if you were fully staffed, what would that look like?
That's very next Good. In my presentation, the very next slide. And I'm sorry, you don't – oh, do you have a presentation in front of you? Okay. So for current other office and current field staff, we have 11 office operations supervisor currently on board. We have 39 clerks, and those are our office staff. Our office is open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. to make sure that we give the field enough support to do their job. And as we go into further peak operations, we're going to extend those hours to late in the evening so that we get all of our work done necessary to complete our count. For field staff, we have 18 recruiting assistants out there throughout the state of Alaska. For remote Alaska, we have hired and deployed both CFSs and enumerators. We have 148 CFSs currently working in our remote Alaska operation, and we have 205 enumerators currently deployed in our remote Alaska operations. The reason I have an asterisk by that 205 is that we have selected 558 who are eligible to work remote Alaska. And the reason they haven't been deployed yet is because the way we conduct remote Alaska operations is we travel from village to village and location to location. And as we get to each location, we train the local enumerators, and then we put them out to work. So that deployment number will increase as we get through the next couple of months of enumeration. For peak operations CFSs and enumerators, I'm talking about all operations except core non-response follow-up, or NRFU, and that does include early NRFU operations. We have started selection for CFSs. Our goal is to select 220, and currently, as of Friday, keep in mind this is a snapshot in time and it changes every day. As of Friday, we had selected 182. For peak operations for enumerators, selection is still in progress also. Our goal is to select 1,640, and we've selected 1,464. For core non-response follow-up, that's everything outside of early non-response follow-up, we have not started selections yet. We'll start on February 14th for CFSs, and our goal is to select another 120 census field supervisors. And for enumerators, we start selection on March 7th, and our goal is to select another 2,530 enumerators. So I want to talk about the different types of operations, the different types of enumeration. The first one is remote Alaska, of course, because we're out there. It's an update enumerate operation, and it's the method used to enumerate the most sparsely settled and isolated parts of Alaska, requiring special travel, early enumeration, and other special arrangements. Enumerators verify the location of each housing unit and knock on the doors to conduct the interviews. What's unique about remote Alaska for this operation, or this decennial, is as enumerators complete each village, enumerating each village, the count, just the count, nothing else, will be validated by a sworn-in local official. This process will allow village leaders to review and certify the count for accuracy before we move on to the next village. The enumeration of group quarters and transitory locations and any other unusual housing situations in these remote Alaska areas will be counted as a part of the remote Alaska operation, as opposed to when we conduct all other group quarters operations. So if you see on the map, all the purple is remote Alaska operations, and the green are all other peak operations. So you can see we have an expansive geography to cover in this operation over the next couple of months. All right, the next slide. I just wanted to touch on briefly group quarters and transitory locations in remote Alaska because we already started the operation last year. First, we collected information on GQs and TLs during initial village visits. That was an operation we conducted last year, actually 2019, not 2018, August through October. The GQ and TL advanced letters telling them that we were coming and reminding them of an appointment was sent out in December. GQ and TL advanced contact started the middle of January with clerks making calls from the office and updating the GQ and TL information in our production control systems. And we not only confirm that they still exist, we confirm their current contact or point of contact, and we gave them the option to respond in multiple ways, whether it's an e-response, an in-person interview, or a paper response data collection, which is just a fancy way of saying paper listing. The milestones for Remote Alaska, most of them are finished. We selected CFSs, we selected enumerators. I threw in early CFS training because we did do that last year, and we had quite a few CFSs participate in visiting every village that was going to be in sample prior to going into the beginning of Remote Alaska operations. We've completed clerical training for advanced contact, and we've completed CFS training for all of our Remote Alaska staff. We started Remote Alaska operations on the 21st, as Lori said, in Tuksuk Bay with Lizzie and our director, and we will go through collecting data in Remote Alaska operations through April 30th. One thing I also added was the enumerator on the job training, because I did say earlier that deployment is still in process. So again, though we've selected many more people, double that we're using now, we'll actually be hiring them to work, to be trained and go into the field to work over the next several months as we go from location to location. The next type of enumeration I wanted to go over is self-response. And that's something we do across the nation as opposed to the Remote Alaska operation. It's the primary response data collection methodology for the 2020 census. Initial invitations to residents in these areas are provided by letter, then postcard, and census questionnaire. This invitation will have a unique ID associated with the housing unit and will be delivered by the U.S. Postal Service. Most households in the country will receive a series of up to 5 mailings from mid-March through the end of October. The invitation letter first, then a reminder postcard, and a census questionnaire. So residents are encouraged to complete their questionnaire on the internet, of course, but that's not their only option for response. They can always respond via phone or paper and mail. Residents who do not respond by a specific date, which is May 5th, will be included in the non-response follow-up operation, or NERFU operation. One thing that I wanted to add that I didn't put on the slide is our field verification operation, because a lot of people seem to be interested in that follow-up operation that's conducted during NERFU. So there are going to be households that respond to the census, and they don't have that special census ID. So when we get those responses, we'll check those addresses with our master address file, or MAF, and if we can't confirm those addresses, we send those addresses out to the field with our NERFU enumerators. They, one, verify that the address still exists, and then, two, they collect the coordinates to confirm with us that those addresses still exist. We don't conduct an interview because we've already gotten that interview information, and self-response is basically the best response, but we do capture the data of the address.
It looks like the U.S. Postal Office ought to be running in the black for March and April.
That's right. We hope so. So the next slide is, in light purple is the area that is designated for self-response and non-response follow-up if needed. The next slide shows milestones for non-response follow-up. You can see we have passed some of these milestones already. For early non-response follow-up, we have completed selection for CFSs. For early non-response follow-up, we have completed enumerator selection. We will be conducting CFS training for early NERFU and later this month, and enumerator training for early NERFU again later this month until April. Early NERFU operation begins in April, re-interview begins in April, then core NERFU CFS training is in April, and core NERFU enumerator training is May 2nd through May 14th. The NERFU operation, core operation, begins May 13th, production ends July 24th, and re-interview ends July 31st. And just quickly about early NERFU, we are going to conduct those in blocks in and around college universities where students may have moved once we start the NERFU operation. So we want to start a little early so we capture them before they go home. The next type of enumeration is called update enumerate, and that also is very specific to Alaska. We don't do it everywhere around the nation, just Maine and Alaska. Update enumerate non-remote Alaska is designed to be counted in areas where the initial village visit requires both updating the address and conducting the enumeration, and remote geographic areas that present unique challenges to accessing housing units. The goal for this operation is to minimize the needed number of personal visits, and the majority of UE operations in Alaska will be conducted in Southeast Alaska. So if you move on to the map, the areas for update enumerate non-remote is the turquoise areas. Now this is a very simple map, so some of these types of enumerations are also smattered throughout the state. They're just not all captured on this very simple map. Update enumerate milestones. You can see we've completed selecting CFSs. We've completed selecting enumerator assistants. We've completed selecting enumerators. We will be training CFSs later this month. We'll be training enumerator assistants in the month of March, and we'll be conducting full enumerator training in the month of March. The operation begins March 16th. Then UE listing QC begins March 19th. Reinterview begins March 23rd. The operation ends April 23rd. And then the UE listing QC and reinterview ends April 30th. So that's a very tight month or series of month for update enumerate. Another and the last type of operation and enumeration that we'll conduct in the state of Alaska, because that's not conducted everywhere for every ACO either, is update leave. It's designed to be counted in areas where the majority of housing units either do not have mail delivered to a physical location of the housing unit, or the mail delivery information for the housing unit cannot be verified. For example, areas with a high concentration of housing units without city-style addresses, areas affected by natural disasters, and areas with a high concentration of seasonally vacant units. Enumerators will canvass assignment areas, or what we call assignment areas, to update census address and map information, then they'll leave an invitation to participate in the census. Now, residents who don't respond via phone, paper, or internet by May 5th will be followed up with as a part of the NERFU operation. So update leave feeds into NERFU if and when necessary. So update leave is the light yellow area on this map. And you'll notice Alaska is the only state that has every type of enumeration involved in getting a complete count. So it's a very busy office. We want to make sure we count everybody. We don't want to miss anyone. So update leave milestones. You can see we've already selected our CFSs. We have selected our enumerators. We are going to be training our CFSs very soon, both for production and QC. We will be training our enumerators in March, our QC enumerators in March. We will be conducting the operation March 15th through April 10th, conducting QC of this operation March 22nd through April 17th. Then we're going to send a reminder letter on April 1st if we haven't gotten a response, and a reminder postcard on April 20th if we haven't gotten a response. I also wanted to talk about group quarters operations because, of course, everyone is interested in how we're going to be enumerating our group quarters facilities and other series of operations. So we enumerate a diverse group of group living quarters, including specialized institutional and non-institutional facilities. Resident services provided at GQs may include custodial or medical care, as well as other types of assistance, and residency is commonly restricted to those receiving these services. Service-based enumeration provides an opportunity for people without conventional housing or people experiencing homelessness to be included in the census by enumerating them at places where they receive services or pre-identified outdoor locations. And then enumeration of transitory locations is a relatively small but very critical operation to count residents who do not have a usual residence elsewhere. These types of locations could be RV parks, campgrounds, hotels and motels, marinas, racetracks, and carnivals. And what I wanted to add here is I actually saw a video of the Lunch and Learn that was conducted last week, and a woman in the audience asked a question about how prisons are enumerated. And I know that all of these types of enumerations won't apply to Alaska, but if there are federal detainees in the custody of the Bureau of Prisons or U.S. Marshals or Immigration and Customs, our headquarters staff will work with those facilities to conduct an enumeration, and they only have one option to be enumerated, and that's e-response. For federal detainees in the custody of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, those enumerations will be managed by our area census offices, and they have all five avenues to respond to the census. And then that also applies to other correctional facilities throughout all of the states, that same method. Enumeration at military installations, we are now, did I do it in wrong order? Okay, enumeration at military installations, we are working directly with the military to count military personnel on installation, and it's now a part of our GQ series of operations. Military residents or military GQ residents are personnel living in barracks and dorms located on the or in the installation. So they only have the option of self-enumeration on these installations, which means that they can e-respond the residents, or our staff will drop off census information and pick them up when they've completed enumeration. The last, can you go over to milestones, please? One more back.
Can we go back? Can we stop on? I know you.
Am I going too quickly?
No. I think you think it's going to be a funny question, and I look to my colleague down the, to my left. But you know, you wouldn't handicap Eielson, would you, for the 3,500 that's coming that won't be counted? Because we could use it in Fairbanks.
Today I can't answer that question, but I could follow up definitely. Really depends on the
Senator
date.
Senator Machicki has a question.
Okay.
You roughly have 6,000 employees on your total list for 735,000 approximately Alaskans. Is that one employee per 122 residents typical, or is Alaska particularly difficult to
Alaska
count?
In some areas are more difficult than areas in other ACO districts and states, mainly because we are one of two states that still do a paper operation for enumeration, and that is a time consuming, it's a demanding operation, and it takes more staff. In some of the areas like Update Enumerate in Southeast Alaska, we enumerate in pairs. In remote Alaska, we not only enumerate in pairs in some areas, depending on the situation we're facing, but our CFSs also list in pairs or in multiple groups. So we use more staff to conduct some operations just in Alaska. So yes, Alaska's special, definitely. Any other questions before
Senator
yes?
Schauer has a question.
It's not really okay. A question. It's really just a follow-up on what Senator Bishop said. It is not insignificant because of the more rural aspect of where Eielson's at. And the numbers, and I don't remember exactly, so I don't want to be held to them, but it's roughly $1 billion of military construction for the base and two full-size squadrons, and they're not small squadrons, and it's thousands of people with the families when you include them coming in. For a small area that's really not that big, the population increase and the use on resources, et cetera, actually is significant, and it brings up a question. I don't know how you, or even if you can, account forward for what's going to happen, but the funding's there, they're going to do it. But it is a salient question for the next 10 years. After that, the resources flowing in will be not allocated correctly because of such a big move. It is actually a good question.
I didn't mean to just rush over that. It is very significant in terms of population. It really depends on the date of residency because everything is based on a reference date of April 1st. So I wouldn't be able to answer that question until I knew when those individuals actually live on base or within the installation. Okay. any other questions before I move on? Because this is my last slide. All right, so group quarters milestones. We did an advanced contact clerical training in January and we're finished. We are doing advanced contact office operations for all areas outside of remote Alaska, and we continue to do that through March. And that's where we contact every GQ facility and make sure that we have the correct contact information and make sure that the group quarters facility still exists, and we give them the option to decide how they want to be enumerated, what avenue they want to take for enumeration. We will be conducting GQ advanced contact CFS training in later this month, because some CFSs or census field supervisors will have to go out to the field to follow up on these facilities where we don't have accurate information anymore. We will be conducting GQ enumeration, just enumeration CFS training in March, GQ enumeration CFS assistant training in March. We will be doing enumerator training in March. We'll be conducting service-based enumerations, or SBE, March 30th through April 1st. So on the 30th, we'll be enumerating shelters. On the 31st, we'll be enumerating soup kitchens and mobile food vans. And then on the 1st, we'll be conducting our targeted non-sheltered outdoor location enumerations for those, basically for those individuals that are experiencing homelessness, as well as the other two types of operations. We like to call that last one TINSEL. In the month of April, we'll be conducting our DVS operation, which is domestic violence shelters. We'll be conducting re-interview for all of these facilities from April through early June. And we have an e-response for those people who decided to respond in that way. We have a cutoff of May 1st. And then, based on our results, we do a late GQ enumeration. And what that means is that, I had to write this down, FSCPE, the Federal State Cooperative for Population Estimates, in late June will be given an opportunity to see our early GQ results. And they can review them to identify potentially missing or misallocated GQs within their states. And then these members will also be able to review GQ cases, specific facilities and locations where enumerators did not get a response. It could be because they were refused, or maybe that GQ wasn't open or available at the time of enumeration. And so those members can give us up-to-date information about contacts or how we can contact them. And then we'll go out and do our late GQ enumeration in the month of July. So that's it for the different series of operations that we'll conduct for enumeration. And again, I just work on operations. I don't have the pleasure of working on all the outreach and preparation that these other ladies do. But if you have any questions about operations, don't hesitate to ask me now or later if you think of any.
Senator Schauer.
Well, we deliver them to the president on the 31st of January in 2020. And then 4 years later, the early results come out.
2021,
I'm sorry. I had the 2018 date wrong, and now the 2021. 4 years later, the early results come out.
Senator Machicki.
So you talked about folks that are essentially using services of some sort. How do you reach those that Alaskans experiencing homelessness all over this state in camps and things that they're not in a shelter or using services on that day or in that segment of time? How do you account for those individuals?
You know, that's a good question, and it's extremely difficult to do so. I'm not going to lie about that, but we are working with our partnership outreach staff, and we have several hundred throughout our region, several based just in the state of Alaska. We are working with our stakeholder organizations to help us identify the locations and the facilities that serve those individuals that may be experiencing homelessness at any one time. and we have worked with different operations in our geography department over the last several years to identify those locations too. We have been, or no, we will be training some early census field supervisors for GQ advanced contact, like I said before, and we're using the current information that we've received from ourselves that we want to update and our stakeholders and going out to pre-identify and confirm where these transitory outdoor locations are and adding any that we may have missed. So we're doing that now to get prepared as early as possible for the tinsel operation and all of the service-based enumeration operations. Any other questions?
Seeing none, I'd like to say I'm very confident and very impressed by all of your enthusiasm and dedication to detail to get a complete count, and it was very good, very comprehensive, and I say kudos to the federal government and for what you're doing to execute, and the follow-up is remarkable. So with that being said, this concludes our today's meeting for today. Thank you. February 6th, we have the Alaska Development Team here this Thursday, and we're going to have an overview of what they've have been doing for the last year and projects in the pipeline, et cetera, et cetera. And thank all my committee members, and I apologize for running this late. And if I'd have been thinking, I'd have gave the gavel to the vice chair, and you guys could have kicked off on time, but I do apologize. So we're adjourned 5:10.